The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, Long Island. This is Jason Azzario, the host. Over the next hour on WGBB 1240 AM here in Babylon, Long Island, where I'm live, direct, and in full effect, coming to you from the media capital of the world, right outside of New York City in Babylon, New York. Listening to WGBB, that's 1240 AM on your dial, or if you're listening in on the internet at sportstalk1240am.com, as we bring you everything that's going on in the wonderful world of sports here on a Sunday night, April the 5th in the year of our Lord 2015. Happy Easter to each and every one of you. And thank you for listening in as you pretty much polish off your Easter meals and desserts or whatever it may be, and listen to a little sports talk as we bring you into the end of this lovely Sunday and into the week, which boasts quite a bit of sports. Because as I've always loved to look at this month as the best sports month of the year. I know people could argue that, and they'll say, Jason, October is the month of sports. NFL's in full swing, so is college football. NHL begins, NBA begins at the end of the month. The baseball postseason, I get that. I do, but nothing beats April. I mean, think about this. The weather starts to get warmer here in the Northeast, number one. Number two, you have the ushering in of a new baseball season, which actually begins tonight in Chicago with the Cardinals and Cubs. A lot of high hopes for the Cubs fans and trying to break an 107-year-old hex, not winning a championship against the Cardinals, who are always perennial favorites in the NL Central to go very far in the National League. But with the baseball in full swing tomorrow, on Thursday you have the Masters down in Augusta, which is one of the best sporting events of the year. You have the NHL season coming to a close. You have the postseason right around the corner for the National Hockey League, as well as the NBA the week after that. You also have the NFL draft, which is moving to Chicago. I don't like that, being a native New Yorker and knowing that for so many years they've had it here in Midtown Manhattan. Now they take their show out to the Windy City. That's on April the 30th. And then tomorrow night, the college basketball season culminates in Indianapolis with a championship game between the Duke Blue Devils and not the Kentucky Wildcats, but the Wisconsin Badgers. And we're going to kick off there. I know it's a little different tune, but if you have been under a rock for the last 4 months and knowing that the Kentucky Wildcats, who were looking to become an immortal college basketball team, they were the first team to start off a season 38-0 going into this Final Four. They had a couple of scares along the way. Obviously, LSU during the regular season, breeze through the SEC. Cincinnati game a tough, little tough fight there in the second round, but no sweat there. And then Notre Dame gave them all they could handle. But Kentucky was able to get out of that region. And then last night, with Duke blasting Michigan State, and kudos to Tom Izzo. We all know Tom Izzo is a great tournament coach. I know it's been 15 years since he last won a title, but he has taken teams that have no business being there. But again, when you have the pedigree of a Tom Izzo, who obviously is one of the top tournament coaches and one of the top college coaches in the nation when it comes to the men's basketball. But be that as it may, they were able to dispose, Duke that was, of Michigan State last night, 81-61. Not really much to talk about there. But the nightcap was the one game that the whole nation was focused on. And you got yourself another great college basketball game. Was it a classic? Can't say it's a classic. But it was a great game in the sense of you had your drama toward the end. You had Kentucky, who was down for most of the game. I understand it was tied at the half, but they were down most of the game. Then they had that late surge there when, after Wisconsin shot the lights out of the ball the first part of the second half, they shot 6 of 7. Then they went through a bad stretch where they only were able to shoot 2 of 10. Down 60-56 with less than 5 minutes to go. They were able to plug away, got a couple of baskets. The big shot there by Sam Decker to put them into the lead for good at 63-60. Kentucky, you know, obviously wasn't able to execute. You could tell they played a little bit tight there. I understood they kept it close. It was within 64-63. But at that point, Wisconsin was just able to not necessarily take over a lot of those baskets, so a lot of those points that they got at the end of the game were all free throws. But Kentucky, 38-0, comes to an abrupt halt. They don't get to see 39, and they certainly won't get to see 40. And me, as the sports purist that I am, I've never seen an undefeated season. 1976, I was only 7 years old, so I did not see Bobby Knight's Indiana Hoosiers win a national title by going undefeated, which is still not the last team. And there were rumors, or I don't say rumors, rumblings that Bobby Knight was laying in the weeds hoping that Kentucky would not match that undefeated season. They wanted to be the last ones. I know Quinn Buckner came out publicly and said, hey, it'd be great if Kentucky were to do it. I don't have a problem with it. I don't know if that was maybe to throw a little bit, I'm not going to say of added pressure. It's not as if the players or John Calipari are going to look at what Quinn Buckner says and right away, ooh, there's added pressure. But anytime, I mean, you think of the Patriots in recent vintage, them going 17-0, or 18-0, excuse me, and then we all know what happened, Super Bowl 42 out in Arizona. You know, it's one of those rare feats that we all love to see and we all would love to experience just as a sports fan, but it never, ever seems to come to fruition. And last night, just when you thought, even at 60-56, with less than 5 minutes to go, with the way Kentucky plays defense and have been tested in this tournament, that you just thought that they were going to pull away and you would have had a classic men's final tomorrow night between Duke and Kentucky. We all know what their history is like when it comes to tournament games. But you don't get that. You'll instead get a Duke-Wisconsin final, which still, I would think, is going to bring a lot of eyeballs to the sets to watch that matchup. We all know Duke, Mike Krzyzewski going for his fifth national championship. Bo Ryan, obviously going for his first. And one last thing about the Wisconsin-Kentucky game. I thought it was to Wisconsin's advantage as the game went on. And people could talk about last year, both teams playing at that same spot and Kentucky winning. But we can look at that. But at the same time, I thought Wisconsin, and people who know and follow college basketball, they know Wisconsin was a great team. I mean, obviously, they're number one in their region. But, you know, everybody just looked at the Kentucky juggernaut. Everybody thought that they could look back at that game last year. And that was last year. You can't compare last year's team to this year's team. There's no way. Granted, Kentucky made it to the national title game and ended up losing to Connecticut, but still, you can't compare that team to this team. But with that being said, Wisconsin, I thought, knowing that they had to go through those rigors and face Kentucky, and I'm sure that's all they heard throughout the whole week, going back to that game last year, different team, different mindset, and it showed last night in Indianapolis. And you would think a lot of those recruits from Kentucky, they're going to go pro. I'm sure it's just going to be a matter of days after the championship game tomorrow night that, you know, you'll hear the likes of Carl Anthony Towns, Willie Cauley Stein. You know, I mean, it's just the whole list. Everybody's just going to jump ship to the NBA, and rightfully so, you would think. And as for the game tomorrow night, I understand people are going to say Krzyzewski, Duke, everybody knows who Duke is. You know, they know Duke just because of the coach. Obviously, they have some very good players themselves, led by Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, who's had a tremendous tournament. But Wisconsin, I tell you, if they didn't make anybody a believer last night, then, you know, you're not paying attention. I think tomorrow night, something's with that Wisconsin team, and it's not to discount what Duke has done, but Wisconsin already has gone through that tough, rigorous game. Duke has pretty much had a cakewalk. Duke has, for a team that did not win the ACC regular season or an ACC tournament, as we all know, prior to the start of this bracket, they roller skated to the Final Four. And now here they are, one game away from Krzyzewski getting a fifth. And with Wisconsin, I don't believe they've been to a championship game since 1941. So you talk about a school that is dying for a championship. I think it's going to be an excellent game. It's been so much of a Magic Carpet ride for Wisconsin. Again, they have the player of the year in Frank Kaminsky. Sam Decker's done just an unbelievable job here in this tournament. Duke, we all know they have their players too. You can't discount them and what they've done. But Wisconsin has had, they're a little bit more battle-tested to me. And all you need to do is look at the game last night to show that this team looks like they're poised to win a championship. You know, that's not anti-Duke, because Lord knows I'm not a Duke Blue Devil fan. But I would look at this game tomorrow night based on what I saw last night. And again, you're only as good as your last game, and that's not to say what happened then is going to carry over to the next game. Because as we've seen in sports time and time again, Wisconsin being the slight underdog that they were, watch them have a letdown and they end up losing, you know, 78-60. I can't see that happening. Now, I understand that was a monumental victory, not only for Wisconsin, but for the school, considering the, you know, just the unbeaten season to that point by the Wildcats. But now, in beating Kentucky, now they have to slam the door and beat Duke. You know, sometimes you have to go through those trials, those tribulations as a team to make that championship that much more special. You know, I hate to bring this up for the Yankee fan, but, you know, when you look at the Red Sox fan back in 2004, the year before, lost in just excruciating heartbreak, as we all know, Aaron Boone off of Tim Wakefield, extra innings. We know that. And then the following year, down 3-0, and then they won the next four to beat the Yankees in an ALCS, and then go ahead to sweep the Cardinals in the World Series and finally get that championship that they've been desperately searching for 86 years up until that point. All right, I'm not trying to match Wisconsin or try to compare Wisconsin to the 2004 Red Sox, but you get my point. Knowing that they got to the Final Four last year, lost to Kentucky, this year beat Kentucky, and then now they got to seal the deal and go ahead and win a championship. Not going to be easy. This could be a close game. I could see that. But Wisconsin, to me, has a little bit more metal, a little bit more toughness. And I could see them winning a game anywhere between 6 to 8 points. You know, I could see it being somewhat similar to yesterday's score. They won 71-64 over Kentucky. Watch it be somewhere in that range. They'll probably win in the 70s. So give or take 70 to 75. And Wisconsin will get that championship, and I'm sure it'll be one that will be remembered forever, considering the outcome of last night's game. I mean, that's the big piece, but now they need to put the icing on top of that cake. And the tournament overall, other than the first day, that Thursday, where you had three upsets, you know, the four teams beating the three, although I'm glad the tournament worked out the way it did, because you didn't want any of the Cinderellas showing up in the Final Four to play Kentucky. You wanted to have the big dogs there. You wanted to have those great matchups. But just like in recent memory, the tournament has been a bore. This has not been a great tournament, let's face it. Yeah, of course you're going to have your games. You're going to have the interesting matchups that you've had. You know, I see that. I get that. No problem. But at the same time, you know, college basketball, as bad as it is in the sense that it's just a three-week sport, but in those 3 weeks, you only get a handful of games. Now, granted, you had a great second game yesterday. First game, you know, 81-61. I mean, please. And obviously, we could go to a few other games throughout this tournament, but at the same time, you know, you're not really getting too much, at least from when I used to watch college basketball back, you know, going into the late 80s, early mid-90s, even to the early 2000s. The sport has changed so much that you can't even get a grasp, can't get a real feel of it. And when you start to get that real feel of it, you're like, oh, this is it? This is it. All right. Well, and then before you know it, it's first Monday in April, championship game comes and goes, and then you're off to baseball, basketball, whatever other sports that you follow. But we'll see tomorrow night. A champion will be crowned in the NCAA men's, so we'll certainly see how that goes. Here at 8:17, 1240 Sports Talk, or Sports Talk 1240am.com, or if you want to give me a call at 631-888-8811. Jason Nazario bringing up to about 9 o'clock. I don't know who the next host is. If I did, I'd let you know. But we'll certainly keep you abreast of what's going on there here on a Sunday night, April 5th, on Easter Sunday. And now as I segue from the NCAAs, I'm going to touch on the NBA for a second, because at the bottom of the hour when we take a break, I'm going to come back with baseball. I want to do a very extensive preview Mets, Yankees. Also want to get into not only what their season is going to be like, I'll give you a World Series prediction. So I want to spend a little bit of time on that. I don't want to just squeeze it all in the next 13 minutes before the break. I figured coming off of college basketball, let me segue to the NBA. There's nothing to discuss, as we all know. I know the Knicks fans are going to jump for joy now that the Kentucky guys, I'm sure, are going to declare, and they're just as pathetic as can be. I went to see the Knicks a week ago last Friday against my beloved Celtics, who they're scratching and clawing. Marcus Smart last night in Toronto, you know, a half game ahead of the Miami Heat, 8th seed in the East, but nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about the Knicks, that's for sure, unless you get to the night when they draw the ping pong balls and the lottery cards. I'm going to say this to the Knicks fan as a Celtic fan, and I'm glad I bring this up, because if the Knicks fan automatically thinks that with them getting the worst record and they'll have 25% of the ping pong balls to get the number one pick, let me tell you something. I'm going to give you 2 years. And I know you're going to laugh and say, ah, who cares, Jason? You know, I was back then. Just take heed, please. Number one, 1997. The Celtics were 15-67 and had the best chance, well, second best chance. Vancouver Grizzlies had the worst record in the NBA at that time. But the Celtics, 15-67, the worst Celtic team in their history. We all know who came out that year. And the Celtics had two picks, number three and number six. Well, it ended up being number three because Philadelphia got number two, and guess who got number one? San Antonio, and the rest is history. And then in 2007, when the Celtics were 24-58, they had an 18-game losing streak in that year, longest losing streak in the history of the franchise. And the top two players coming out, Greg Oden, who was deemed the next Bill Russell, and number two pick that year, Kevin Durant. Where did the ping pong balls fall for the Celtics? And I think they could have, the worst, they probably were in the top three. I can't remember off the top of my head. I should know this, but what did they get as far as the ping pong balls? Fifth pick overall. Thankfully, they traded that to Seattle to get Ray Allen, and then they traded for Kevin Garnett, and the rest is history there. But that certainly changed the franchise because they didn't get a top two pick. So, Knicks fans, just because if you end up 15-67 or 16-66, don't think that the number one pick is just going to be signed, sealed, delivered, gift wrapped with a bow on top come whatever the third May of the third Tuesday of May, whenever they have that draft lottery show. Just remember that. And as far as the other local team, if we're going to talk about the Nets, I know you're looking at playoff positioning. As the season ended right now, you'll be playing the Cavs in the first round, which you'll be lucky to win a game. And let's face it, the Nets have played well down the stretch. Nets have played well. Darren Williams has contributed a little bit. Brook Lopez has been phenomenal. He's really been a key component to that team as far as this late season surge is concerned. I don't know if this is going to hold up. You know, you have those three teams fighting at the bottom of for the eighth seed between the Brooklyn Nets, the Celtics, and the Heat. They're all separated pretty much by a game. And as I try to pull up the standings here on the computer, the Nets, and they have a bunch of home games coming up for them too, so that also bodes well. Although the Nets haven't been a great home team, but you know, you figure, hey, if you could just get through the stretch of the season and try to win those home games, then, I mean, obviously you take it. But we'll certainly wait and see how this is all going to unfold here as I pull up the standings now, finally. Now you have the Heat, who have a game in hand on the Celtics, and they're also tied with the same amount of games as Brooklyn. All three teams do not face one another throughout the rest of the season. They've all finished their matchups for the campaign. But the Celtics have five games left. The Heat and the Brooklyn Nets both have six games left, as well as the Indiana Pacers. And the Pacers today got Paul George back. And actually, they're just pasting the Heat right now. So the Heat is still won't be able to make up ground on the Celtics with a victory today. If they did, they would have been tied for the eighth seed. As it is right now, Indiana up 94-75, which I'm sure is happy for one caller who's or one fan of this broadcast, or one Elwood in Indianapolis. I wouldn't be surprised if he's at the game. Let's see what Paul George has done this evening. 15 minutes, 5 of 12, 3 of 6 from 3, you know, 13 points. And listen, for a guy who had as gruesome as a leg injury as you could possibly have, that's, you know. And Wade is back in the lineup, I see. He's 11 of 20. Remember, the other night in Cleveland, he hyperextended that knee, you know, fell to the court. A lot of people thought that, oh, geez, with the way Wade has been injured and the way he hasn't really performed, you know, although he's performed well, but again, we all know his history as far as injuries are concerned over the last couple of years, that certainly held all of Miami and, of course, the Heat's collective breath. But now, as we head down to the final 9 days of the season, you got a logjam there at the bottom of the Eastern Conference bracket. And the Nets, why can't they make it? I understand you could say the same for the Celtics or the Heat because there are just so many games. You know, it's just so close. They're all separated by a half game. But the Nets, even if they make it 7th or 8th seed, they're going to have to play either the Hawks or the Cavs, either one of those two, which, you know, obviously it doesn't bode well. I mean, if you win a game, if you're lucky, if you go 6 games, maybe get that 3rd home game and you lose, you'll be happy about that. You know, obviously if you don't get that, then, you know, you'd want to at least get to a game. Yeah, I mean, you're going to play 4 games regardless, but if you could get that 6th game in your building down 3-2, up 3-2 would be phenomenal, but you don't think against a 1 seed that that would ever happen. But remains to be seen. So you got, in essence, you have 4 teams for 2 spots if you want to throw the Pacers in the mix. But right now, as we look at it, Brooklyn, Boston, Miami fighting for the 7th and 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. And then out west, I know the Pelicans are surging fast on the Thunder. They're a half game back. OKC lost to Houston earlier today. We know no Durant for the rest of the season, or pretty much, obviously, the playoffs if they make it. So, will New Orleans leapfrog over Oklahoma City? I don't know if they have any games against one another, but it will certainly keep an eye on that to see if OKC. And I know a lot of people thought that, even with Durant in the lineup, oh, that's going to be the worst matchup for Golden State. Golden State's owned them this year. And Golden State, you know, potentially they could win 69 games. I don't think they will. In fact, they're getting buried by San Antonio tonight. They're losing by 14 in the third quarter right now. But we know Golden State could score with the best of them. But it's going to be a very, very, very fascinating NBA postseason, more so in the West than in the East. Everybody thinks in the East is going to be LeBron. Who knows about Derrick Rose? He may be coming back here in this final stretch of the season as a, you know, just to kind of get his sea legs, get his playing, getting into playing shape, and for him to see if he could generate some type of momentum going into a postseason. There's a lot expected in Chicago, especially when Rose is in the lineup. The Hawks, can they sustain this unbelievable season that they've had? Can they go far in this postseason? You know, at least make a conference final. I mean, you would think they would, considering that if whomever they play in the first round, their second round matchup, the 4-5 Toronto-Washington, probably a little bit more afraid of Washington because they have, they're young, plus they have some veterans on that team. But the Western Conference is just going to be loaded. You know, I think it would be nice to see New Orleans in there. I wouldn't want to see Oklahoma City. New Orleans would be sacrificial lamb to the Golden State Warriors anyway, but how I look at it is that you want to see the next budding superstar, Anthony Davis, on the big stage. And what bigger stage than the postseason? So have him go there. Don't have Russell Westbrook, who's going to be running on fumes with all these triple-doubles and everything that he's done here, to make it into the postseason and for them to do any damage. I don't see that happening. I just don't. And if my MVP vote for right now is of this day, I got to vote for Stephen Curry. I understand James Harden, he's going to get a ton of votes. There's people in the Russell Westbrook camp that think that he should be the MVP, considering Durant was out most of the season. LeBron's going to get his votes, but LeBron's already won 4 MVPs, so this wasn't really an MVP season for him, although he's shown flashes of that, and for all intents and purposes, is the league MVP, but I mean, let's put it this way. He's not going to get it this year, considering the slow start, and it's either going to be Curry's or Harden's to win, but I think it's Stephen Curry. That season, that team has had a phenomenal season, and they've just done unbelievably well. So that's your NBA. 3 minutes till we get to break. Just to give you a little preview on what's to come in the next half hour of the program. When we come back from commercial, we will go right into it. Little 2015 MLB preview. We'll also discuss the Mets and Yankees' chances for 2015. We'll go through some of the keys to their seasons and what they can do as far as maybe making a long run into the postseason. We'll also talk a little bit of the Masters, which starts on Thursday. Tigers going to be in the mix. We'll also talk about the Islanders and Rangers. Islanders running out of gas here down the stretch, but the Rangers with Lundqvist back, who knows? They want to see if they can get back to a cup. All right, we'll be back in a couple minutes here. Jason Nazario on 1240 AM Sports Talk Radio.
Radio New York and AM 1240 WDBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WDBB. Or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, Jason Nazario here, bringing you up to 9 o'clock. Don't know who the next host will come in at from 9 to 10, but I'll bring you over the next half hour here on WGBB, 1240 AM Sports Talk here on a Sunday night right outside of New York City in Babylon. Now, the MLB season, which begins tonight in Chicago, to me it all begins tomorrow. I understand ESPN, they want to get that first game, Cardinals-Cubs, all right. But we all know opening day's tomorrow. Yankees open up their season against the Toronto Blue Jays for the first time in what seems to be forever, certainly a generation that the New York Yankees aren't at the forefront of the baseball world or near the top of anybody's list when it comes to another MLB season. And if you're a Yankee fan, I understand you don't have a lot of expectations. It's kind of hard to think that for the last 20-some-odd years, almost 20 years, you figured out, going back to 1994, we all know the strike, and in 95, that's when everything just jump-started. But even without those expectations, the good thing is that you're in a division that there's no one clear-cut team or two clear-cut teams that could just run away with it. For instance, if you're a Met fan, as much as you have visions of possibly making a wild-card run or going to the postseason, of course, that's why they play the games. Can't say there's no way. But on paper right now, there's no way the Mets are going to win this division. You have a team in the Washington Nationals that are fully loaded, primed to make a long postseason run. And we'll get to the Mets in a little bit, but that's my point here if you're a Yankee fan. That despite the fact that there's no expectations or you're not pushing all your chips to the middle of the poker table, proverbially speaking, you still have to look at that division and say, you know what? If we hang around, there's quite the chance that we could win a division. The big question is, what number is that going to be in order for you to win a division? Well, you have to start at 90, and if you think that the Yankees have 90 wins in them, then God bless you. I think they fall short of that. We all know injuries take part of a whole season. You know, we'll get into some of the other teams in the division in a second, but just to concentrate on the Yankees, if you think the Yankees win 90 games, I tell you, you must have a lot of money just to at your disposal, because there is no way that this Yankee team, considering the way it's built right now, that they're primed for a division, maybe a wild card, but it also depends on so many other teams. And how I look at it is three reasons. One is the pitching staff. We all know pitching is key. You need to have horses, or you need to have pitching that's going to throughout the whole season. And as we've seen so far, when you look at Tanaka, who has even admitted that his fastball isn't what it was last year, a few mile an hour short, which is not good, and I'm sure it's salivating hitters throughout baseball, especially if they're ahead in the count. And Tanaka didn't have a great spring. So let me throw that in the mix. You also got to hold your breath with Tanaka, because we all know about that partial tear of the elbow, and he had whatever it was, 2 months of rest, and he even had one start at the end of last season. But we all know those ulnar collateral ligaments, boy, you're really rolling the dice there if you're Brian Cashman and company. Really are. And we all know it was a huge investment, $155 million, whatever it was last year. They didn't want him to go into the ninth so you could see him in 2016. But you know what? You only hope that the kid doesn't blow out his elbow, and then you're not going to see him until the middle of next year. So, but the staff is critical. Sabathia had an awful spring. You know, Ivanova's not going to come back until probably June. Michael Pineda, who I really liked even going back before the Yankees traded him when he was in Seattle, big kid, good stuff, great pitching motion, but he's also had his injuries. And how consistent he can stay on the mound throughout the course of a season, that remains to be seen. The Yankee pitching staff is pretty much right now, I'm not going to say it's put together with Scotch tape and bubblegum, but once a leak starts to spring, there's going to be several leaks. And in a division where you have Baltimore with Chris Davis coming back and Adam Jones in Baltimore, Boston with a revamped lineup that they have there up north, Toronto, who a lot of people think that they could do damage this year, you know, adding Russell Martin to go along with the big bats in that lineup, the Edwin Encarnaciones, the Jose Bautistas of the world, obviously Jose Reyes at the top of that lineup. Pitching is a premium, as we all know, in Major League Baseball, but in that division, if any one of your guys goes down or two or whatever it may be, it could be a long season. So staff is critical. Number two is the age on this team. The age on this team, when you look at first base, you look at the outfield, and particularly right field, the staff alone, Sabathia is already in his mid-30s. We all know the mileage on his arm there. You know, there's certain positions that, you know, McCann isn't a young guy, and obviously did not have a good year last year. When you have an older team to go through those dog days of August, which you don't really have in New York anymore, it's just like an extended spring, but, you know, age is critical. You know, you got to have that team that, I mean, listen, they all can't be 24 years old. We understand that. But for so many years, the Yankees have had the aging veterans. They've had guys that have already been long in the tooth, guys that certainly have been well past their prime. And now they're trying to make that transition toward that younger player, or just to have a little bit more of a younger identity, whether it be Tanaka or Betances at the back of the bullpen or Gardner. You know, Ellsbury, I believe, is now 31 now, but still. You know, he's had his injury history going back to his days with the Red Sox. So age also plays a factor in it. And two, or I should say in three, that was two. Three is the production of these four players. A-Rod, I'm not going to make a big deal about, because you're not expecting a lot from A-Rod. You know, A-Rod's actually a metaphor for this Yankee season, because you don't know what you expect. You don't know what you're going to get from him. But you know what? If you get 20, 75, 80, and 270, you jump for joy. You sign for it in blood. If you get A-Rod, that's 220. You know, 13 home runs and 45 RBIs. You know, all right, he's a bum, steroids, whatever. But to me, it lies on these players. Beltran, Teixeira. I'm going to say McCann because he needs to have a bounce back year. And Tanaka. To me, those are the four key guys on that team. If you get all four of those guys to be where they should be, and I understand Tanaka is a little incomplete because last year was his first year and it was cut short because of the injury, but I'm not saying you got to get monster years of these guys or even big years, but you have to have very good years. You have to have good years. So if Tex could give you 260, 270, 30, and a smidge over 100, McCann, you would think he's going to bounce back. Beltran, if he can stay on the field, you know he's probably going to DH at times, although that's what A-Rod's going to do. You know, that's where he's going to be playing most of the year. You know, Beltran has to bounce back. He had a hot start to the season last year, and then the injuries curtailed the season big time. You got to get the production from the veteran players. If they don't get that there, I mean, where are you going to get it from? Didi Gregorius? Chase Headley? You know, Gardner had a spike in power last year, but, you know, he's not a power guy. The Yankee number, I think it was 82.5. The Yankees are going to be somewhere around there. I don't think they're going to be under 500. I mean, barring their pitching staff collapsing, I can't see that. And I understand a lot of people were big on that Andrew Miller signing. And listen, he's not a bum. I'm not trying to say that. But I think that, listen, Andrew Miller's bounced around in Major League Baseball several teams. And sometimes I understand it takes a while for you to get, you know, just to get that, to ride that crest, to get into that major league groove, to kind of find yourself, to feel, you know, I dig that. We've seen it happen to so many other players. The one that comes to mind is Jeremy Affeldt, reliever for the San Francisco Giants. Highly touted, came up Kansas City Royal system, then went to Cincinnati, then obviously San Francisco. Now he's a middle relief guy, and he's been unbelievable in the postseason over the years, but he redefined himself. And I guess Andrew Miller's done that, but to me, Miller's not a guy that I'm going to be shaking in my boots saying, oh boy, he's coming in the game. Stand back and, you know, he's just going to blow everybody away. And Betances, you know, he hasn't had a great spring either. So we'll see. I think the Yankees will be anywhere between, that number is close. I can see him going 85 and 77 on the outside looking in. I believe they won 85, though. They may have been 84 and 78 last year. I mean, that's what I see with the Yanks. You know, probably somewhere third place in the division, somewhere in the middle. And that division is going to be tricky because which team is going to be the one, you know, Boston we know has a very stout lineup, but their pitching is suspect. The Blue Jays, they lost Marcus Stroman, a big key component to their pitching staff. He's gone, but they got a couple other arms that may be coming up to take over. And, of course, they have a very good lineup. Baltimore, can they come back and do what they did last year without Nelson Cruz in Seattle? Tampa, you don't expect much from considering, you know, that they haven't really done, the only guy they really have on their team is Evan Longoria. You know, Matt Moore still coming back from the surgery, Tommy John. I'm sure they're going to still be in games, a lot of 2-1 games, but still, that's what you're going to get for the Tampa Bay Rays in 2015. So for the Yankees, I'm sure they're going to have their moments. I'm sure they're going to be in the thick of things in that division, but I don't think they're going to have enough to get over the top to crown themselves a division champ. And as far as the wild card, same deal. 85 is not going to get you a wild card, even in second place. As for the Mets, hope springs eternal. I know a lot of Met fans, they're giddy. Me, and I'm a huge Met fan, diehard. I'm not as giddy because there's so many expectations around this team this year that they almost expect to come out of the gate flying. Well, their first three games are going to be a true test because they go to the nation's capital starting tomorrow. Bartolo Colon on the mound, Max Scherzer. Again, it's not football, so this isn't going to be a big test. The Mets go in there and sweep the Nationals, which is not going to happen. But let's just say, for argument's sake, if they do, you know, it's not going to make their season. You know, still 159 other games to be played. And as we all know, the Nationals have had the Mets number, especially in Citi Field, over the last 3-4 years. So when you look at the landscape of the division for the Mets, just like I said with the Yankees, that hey, they may be in the mix. They may be able to come right in and, you know, if all breaks well, they may be in the thick of things for a division in September. But for the Mets, Not in this case. And what I'm looking at here for the Mets are three things for this season. I am optimistic. Not cautiously, I am optimistic. But here are the three key components for me for 2015. One, they must get off to a good start. And granted, you're going to have punching bags with the Braves and the Phillies. They're going to be awful. But 20 of the first 23 games are against or in the division. And the three games that aren't in the division of those 23 are in Yankee Stadium. Which, who knows, for the first time, I know the fans, they're going to be going crazy. This could be a very interesting Subway Series matchup because they're two teams kind of heading in different directions. But I'm sure the Yankees and their pride, and they're going to want to show that, hey, you know, we're still the top banana. We're still the big brother on the block. So the Mets' schedule right off the bat is not easy. You know, they play the Nats six times. They play the Marlins seven times. And the Marlins give the Mets fits. I understand the Mets have had their moments against them. But believe you me, you know, I've been down to that stadium down there, and I love that ballpark, Marlins Park. And every time I walk in there when the Mets play, they lose. So, and then I understand the Braves and the Phillies. And the Braves made an unbelievable trade. I couldn't believe the trade. And I just saw it. Just my eyeballs popped out of my head where the Padres, and you talk about a team that's going for it. They traded for the Braves, that is, their closer, Craig Kimbrel, who arguably is the best in the game, and Melvin Upton, formerly BJ Upton, to San Diego. So the Upton brothers get reunited. But my thing is that I guess BJ is going to go back to the infield because he's not going to play the outfield because Will Myers is in center. Now, San Diego is a team that wouldn't spend money to save their lives, and now all of a sudden they're, you know, you would think they're in the Northeast. New York, Philly, or Boston. Which is good for them. God bless them. But to me, the Mets have to get off a good start. They have to. Terry Collins is going to be under fire. No excuses from Terry this year. And it's not as if the Mets have a juggernaut team. They're going to be wrong. But again, the expectation level is leaps and bounds above any year since moving into that new ballpark in 2009, Citi Field. Number two is their offense. And I understand their offense has been explosive here in the exhibition season. But now, this is where it counts. So Michael Kadire and his six spring home runs, that doesn't mean anything now. You know, Kadire could take his 2-3 at-bats a day and then he could go. No, now he has to play 9 innings. He's going to have to play the field the whole time. As we all know, he's been injured the last 2 years. He's 36 years old, 2-year contract. A lot is expected out of this guy, especially considering how he's gotten off to this hot start here during spring training. You know, could Duda duplicate 30 home runs? Could David Wright somehow, some way bounce back? And one thing about David Wright, let me say this real quick. You know, a lot of people look at those early years of David Wright and the numbers just fly off the page. 26-116, 31-07, 33-124, batting .324. Why is that? One guy, Carlos Delgado. I know you probably fell out of your chair listening to that. Carlos Delgado, Jason, what are you kidding? Yeah, Carlos Delgado. He was the anchor of that lineup that had Jose Reyes, Carlos Beltran, Paul Aduca, who was a very good two-hitter, especially in that 06-07 season. You also had, like I said, Delgado, Moises Alou for 1 year, who was actually had a 30-game hitting streak the 1 year that he was there. That was in 08. So he had protection in the lineup, and he batted fifth. Now he's batting third. He doesn't see half the pitches that he sees. I understand he got beamed in the head in 09 with Matt Cain, but he hasn't been the same player since. But Wright has to have a year where he's approaching 20 home runs, close to 100 RBIs. He has to bat over 300, and his on-base has to be 390. Granderson has to have a bounce-back year. So that offense, they have to be able to put up runs because you have a pitching staff, even without Zach Wheeler, that could be lights out. And I understand there was an argument there with, oh, Matt Harvey should start this game tomorrow, so on and so forth. To me, it doesn't matter. Harvey's going to get his starts as long as he's healthy, and that's all that matters. I'm not looking at him, oh, he should have pitched tomorrow, or he should have pitched game one next week at Citi Field against the Phillies. To me, no. Let him pitch. I believe he's pitching the third game of the year Wednesday, and he's going to pitch next week at Citi Field, and then away you go. You're going to see Harvey plenty enough if he's healthy. So you know what? Whether it's game three, game nine, game 15, 28, 65, doesn't matter. So the Mets, that's number two. So the good start is key. Because obviously if they get off to a bad start, Collins is going to be out the door. And Bob Guerin is probably going to be the guy who – will be in the interim. Yeah, not Wally Backman. I know everybody wants Wally. And then number three is going to be the bullpen. I know a lot of people think Jeurys Familia should be the closer. I like Familia a lot. He has great stuff, but I don't know if he has the makeup. To me, Mejia has more of the makeup. He's the type of guy that he could blow two saves in a row, and he'll come back the next day and be like, give me the ball, I don't care. So what if I blow two saves? Familia, I don't see that in him. I don't see that bulldog mentality. Although I think he has better stuff than Mejia, but you have to have that makeup, that mental makeup as a closer. To me, I don't think Familia has that. But there's bullpen, you know, with the Sean Gale Martins of the world and the Jerry Blevins, and, you know, you got guys that are, you know, lefties that, you know, when they got to get a lefty out, especially in that division, Bryce Harper. You know, who else? Of course, Jason Hayward now is in St. Louis. He's not even in Atlanta anymore. You know, you can still say the Chase Utleys and the Ryan Howards. Obviously, you got to face the Phillies a million times, even though Howard is a shell of his old self, but you get the point. And when Matt Harvey goes out there and he throws for 115 pitches and he pitches 7 innings of one run, two hit ball, and he leaves with a 2-1 victory or 2-1 lead in the 8th inning, and he hands it over and, you know, starts to fall apart, then, you know, first thing you're going to say is, what's his bullpen done? To me, those are the three key components. 83 wins is their number. I think they'll probably go a little bit above that. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up, just like I said before, the Yankees, 85-77. So many things have to break right. The National League isn't really that strong. It's very top-heavy. Washington, L.A., you know, St. Louis or Pittsburgh. I don't believe in the Cubs just yet. And I know, to me, that was a disgrace, Chris Bryant. The kid hit 9 home runs. I know they didn't want to start his major league clock to pay him. Give me a break. I mean, give me a break. Yo, Cubs could actually be relevant this year. We know the moves they made in the offseason. We know all that young talent that's on that team. Why not? Let them all play together. And I understand you could bring them up in May or whatever it is, and I'm sure they're still, you know, they're still thinking about, oh, well, hey, you know, we want to stall the service time. No, who cares? Bring them up now. You've got to worry about that 6 years down the road. Why are you worrying about that now? You know, Cubs aren't, you know, Tampa or Houston. So to me, that was a disgrace. But it's very top-heavy. So any one of those teams, other than L.A., Washington, St. Louis, you know, Pittsburgh's going to make a wild-card push. You would think the Giants, you can't count them out. You could throw the Mets in there, Marlins, whomever it may be. But I can't wait. You know, baseball is here. You had a 63-degree day here in New York, thank goodness. But it's supposed to rain the rest of the week after tomorrow, so who knows? I just can't wait for it to be consistently 75 and just throw those jackets in the closet until November or maybe October, whatever you want to call it. So that's my deal. And as far as the World Series, I'm going to just say this. I think it's the Nationals' year to win it all. And I'll give you a surprise team in the American League. I think they're going to go to World Series. I'm going to say Seattle. Seattle has King Felix. Not only that, but I think this could be an MVP season for Robinson Cano. He has Nelson Cruz in that lineup, which is going to help him. Seattle, they had a very good year last year. I could see them now making, you know, taking another leap, making it into postseason. I'm picking Seattle, Washington World Series. I know it's a little bit weird. I know a lot of people like the Indians for some reason. I don't see it. I understand you want to give the kid who won the Cy Young last year, the Corey Kluber. Oh, hey, maybe he'll duplicate that. I don't know. I got to see it to believe it again. But I'm picking Mariners, Nationals, World Series, and I'll take the Nats all the way. Nats just had, I mean, they just have young player after young player. I know the kid Rendon, the third baseman, has going to get his knee checked out again, which is sad. But, I mean, you just look at the young talent on that team. And look at Strasburg. Strasburg was supposed to be the guy who's supposed to be the face of baseball when it comes to pitchers are concerned. The guy, Tommy John, he hasn't really done anything. He's had his moments, but for all intents and purposes, for a guy number one drafted overall, he's been a disappointment. But, I mean, with Bryce Harper and Rendon, and Drew Storen, let me just say this. He was a kid who was supposed to be their closer. And I know it was a meaningless game yesterday, but Chris Young hitting a home run deep in 8th inning, Storen, he's just, I don't know. If you're a Nationals fan, I'd be scared whenever he comes to the game. I know he blew the game against St. Louis and the divisional round back in 2012, I'd be scared. Oh, I'd have to show up to set because I couldn't watch Thornton pitch. And he has talent. He has a live arm, but I couldn't. But thank goodness baseball is here. We'll be tuned in tomorrow, 1 p.m. at the stadium. We'll see what A-Rod, the introductions will be like for him. 4 o'clock down in the nation's capital, Mets and Nats. And we're on our way. A couple of quick things before I say goodnight and pass it over to Raymond Moore and Brian White, who will be your host to carry over for the next hour here on WGBB. If anybody wants to give me a quick call, please feel free. 631-888-8811 is the telephone number. SportsTalk1240AM.com if you're streaming on the web. So before I bid adieu for this Sunday evening, I want to thank my operator back there, Mr. Brian Graves, who does a tremendous job here. So I do thank him for his assistance on the other side of the glass. Also want to thank the head honcho, Rob Kowal, I believe celebrating a birthday this week. So he's an Aries like myself, as my birthday just passed. So early happy birthday to Rob. And my couple of quickies. Islanders, Rangers, I'm actually going to be there this Saturday. I'm very looking forward to it. The last regular season game in Nassau Coliseum. Islanders are hosting the Columbus Blue Jackets, who won 9 in a row all of a sudden, although they're out of the playoff contention. But Islanders have stumbled here. They're going to make a postseason. I just wonder how much they have left in the tank. I hope that from the last game of the season, they only have a few days before all the matchups are set, before they get the puck dropped that Wednesday, which will be the 15th of April, I just hope that they have enough to make a run. Can they go to a cup? I thought maybe a month ago they had a potential to do so. Now, I don't know if they do. Rangers have just been on fire. They have had a phenomenal season. I know Lundqvist just came back into the mix just recently, and I know he hasn't really been that well. He hasn't played that well, but still, he's just trying to get his sea legs underneath him. I think the Rangers can make a deep run. I think the Islanders can too. But to me, they're after such just a tremendous start, and Okposo being hurt and him coming back into the mix, and you know Halak playing all these games and the rigors of the season, I think it started to catch up to this team a little bit. So you just only hope that they can take a deep breath here, play out this final week, you know, have a nice closing out ceremony at the Coliseum there Saturday night for regular season, and then I wish they could go back to the 80s to break out the sparklers for the postseason. For if you're an Islander fan, remember that, especially being out here in Long Island, if the true Islander fan, I'm sure they remember that. Before the national anthem, you had the sparklers out. Oh, it was amazing. I wish they could do that here. But obviously with all the fire codes and laws, there's no way that that's going to happen. So we'll see what the Islanders could do here down the stretch, as well as the Rangers. We'll keep an eye on that. And then lastly, as far as golf is concerned, that's right. I have to bring up golf because the Masters, that's one tournament, people, that I love to watch. I started following it since 2005, which was just an amazing tournament. That was between Tiger and Chris DeMarco, if you remember. It was just a phenomenal tournament. I got hooked. That was the first day I really got hooked on golf. Golf is definitely an older man sport. I don't expect a 20-year-old to sit in front of their set, let's say on a Sunday afternoon if it's raining here in the Northeast, to watch that or to follow it online or whatever it may be. But the Masters, it is what it is. It's Augusta. It ushers in spring. When you watch it on HD, it's just green. It's lush. It's gorgeous. And Tiger now back in the mix. I can't expect him to do anything here. I would love Tiger to be at the top of the leaderboard. I am a Tiger supporter. I can't say I'm a fan. I do like Tiger. I think the Tiger of old, he was as much of an assassin as Michael Jordan was in his day when he played for the Bulls. But Tiger, as we all know, he certainly has not been able to make cuts in the last couple of years. He hasn't, he's had to leave tournaments due to injury just in the last few months. I'm sure that if Tiger could take off, he probably would, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a thing where not only because it's Augusta and because of golf, knowing that he's still a name, even amongst the likes of the Rory McIlroys of the world and the Dustin Johnsons and the Bubba Watsons and, of course, Phil Mickelson as well. Just knowing his competitive juices, it had to flow to know that he had to be a part of this tournament. How he's going to do, I couldn't even tell you. Put it this way, if he's within 5 strokes come Sunday, that'd be phenomenal. I hope he does have a good weekend. I hope he makes the cut, at least. But when you look at this tournament, obviously Bubba Watson has won it twice over the last, you know, several amount of years. Rory McIlroy, who had that meltdown a couple of years ago, if you recall. I'm sure he's been chomping at the bit even ever since then. What did he have? I believe he had like an 8-stroke lead going into that Sunday. He had just a tremendous lead, and he just spit the bit. Let's face it. But that starts on Thursday. Looking forward to that, as well as the baseball tomorrow. National championship game tomorrow night. I like Wisconsin over Duke, if you didn't listen to earlier on the program. NHL coming to a close with the playoffs on the horizon. NBA coming to a close with the playoffs on the horizon. NFL draft at the end of the month, April 30th in Chicago. The best sports month of the year is April. And I am Jason Nazario. Until the next time, my friends, here on Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBB. Enjoy the rest of your Easter. Thanks for listening in. Raymond Moore and Brian White coming up next here on WGBB. Until then, everybody, have a good night.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.